listening to a PERC podcast brought to you by the Property and Environment Research Center in Bozeman, Montana. This episode features PERC President Terry Anderson and noted ecologist Daniel Botkin discussing the PERC Lone Mountain Forum, Reconciling Economics and Ecology.
Dan, it's been a pleasure having you at PERC, especially because when I first was made aware by one of my colleagues of discordant harmonies, it was just a revelation to me as to the interface that could exist between ecology and economics. And it's really changed the way I think about that interaction. And maybe you could just say a few words about the Kodachrome versus the moving picture analogy that I think is so powerful.
Okay, but I'll also say that I've been delighted to get to know you and to get to know PERC. And the discussions we had this morning, I found very insightful, and I wished more people could hear them. But the simple picture is that people have long believed for thousands of years and continue to believe, even scientifically, that nature, undisturbed, achieves a fixed condition that is perfect, best, highest diversity, most productive, most desirable, and that any change is bad. And that why does it change? Because we act badly towards it. And the reality is, nature's always changing. The climate's always changing. Species come and go. Population dynamics always change. So these are non-steady state, continuously changing. So it used to be thought of as a Kodachrome, a still life, and what we really understand it as a moving picture show. And that's why I called it discordant harmonies, because this Greek philosopher Plotinus said the characteristic of nature is like the sounds that come from playing discordant tones. And that's what it is.
That's beautiful. But I couldn't agree with you more, and yet it seems to me that policy is still made based on this notion of nature is out there and we need to put a fence around it to keep us out, in a sense, so it will be protected forever. And Emma Morris's work on the rambunctious garden is brilliant this way. Peter Kariva at the Nature Conservancy is shaking up the conservancy by saying, we can't just say we protected land because we put an easement on it. Can we break out of that still life?
Well, the reason I decided I needed to write the new book, The Moon and the Nautilus Shell, is that things haven't changed anywhere near what I was hoping. And what I say when I'm asked about this is that if you ask an ecologist or an environmentalist, does nature never change? And they'll say, of course not. Nature's always changing. But if you ask the scientists to write down a theory to solve an environmental problem, to give advice about a law, and if you look at the laws that dominate our environment, they're all based on the idea that nature is fixed and steady state.
I think we could say the same thing about economists. If you ask economists, is the world ever in equilibrium, the market ever in equilibrium, they'd say, well, of course not. And yet we create policy, we profess about how we should fix the market as if there is this equilibrium state out there that we can reach by tweaking it, by making these changes. So economists aren't...
You know, Terry, there's a big irony here, because these ideas were reinforced by the invention of integral calculus, pencil and paper mathematics that made dealing with steady state and optimum conditions mathematically straightforward. But now we have the computing systems everywhere. I mean, you know, they're in our cell phones and everywhere. And we have the tools to deal with non-steady state systems so wonderfully, and yet we're not making use of them.
Yeah. But even then, I think, especially once, well, I don't probably not correct to say in the sitting next to an ecologist. I was about to say that once you introduce humans and the dynamic nature of the human mind, even those big computers won't work. But I think if I've understood you correctly, the environment, the ecology, the ecosystem is equally complex, and the models we're going to come up with and put into these computers may not give us very precise understandings of what's happening.
Well, the surprising thing is that you can model this surprisingly well. I mean, you know, I developed this model of forest dynamics, mm-hmm. and it has worked very well. We developed it in 1970, and it does take into account mm-hmm. the way trees respond to light, temperature, water, nitrogen, and compete with each other. And the forecasts in these models have been shown to be very accurate. We just had a paper after more than 40 years, another paper just published that shows that we've been able to validate these models so that the forecasts are 97% accurate. Mm-hmm. And so we can do this much better than we've thought.
Would it be correct to say that we can do that if we look at a forest because we've isolated in some ways a system that we with our feeble human minds can wrap those minds around, but that as the world has gone global, and hence the environmental movement has gone global, that trying to model larger ecosystems is more difficult, just as it is for markets?
Well, in principle it's more difficult, but I think in practice what's happened is back to the equilibrium. That imposed on top of any of these dynamic models is these steady state ideas that keep pushing us in the wrong direction.
Yeah, yeah.
And apparently that's happening in economics as well as in environment.
Absolutely. And I think here at PERC, what we really want to focus on is the ways we can bring the dynamic nature of human beings and markets to interplay with the dynamic ecology, so that the prices are one way that we capture a lot of the information from the forest models, so to speak, that you've done.
And I think there's this very important central theme here, that both economics and ecology need to break away from steady-state thinking, from equilibrium, in a big way. We really have to accept it down deep. And then the last discussion that we had about how persistent and important folkways are, an awful lot of what is passed as ecological science is actually a repetition of folkways that go back to the Greeks and Romans and continue on. Mm-hmm. And it's probably true in economics as well. And so we have to account for these cultural aspects, and we have to be able to distinguish between what is folkways belief and what is science.
Mm-hmm. Well, both of us have been professors, and both of us know you can really dazzle the students with these nice tidy static models, and they think you're so smart because you know where that ecosystem should be or where that market should be, and it's hard to break out of that mold, I think. But getting you here and having the group of people we've had together to discuss how we might reconcile our two disciplines has just been a wonderful experience.
It's a terrific group. I mean, it's amazing the people you've got together, considering the books they've written and the things they've done, everything from Jack Horner with his study of paleontology to Emma and her book, The Rambunctious Garden, and Charles Mann, and yes. Matt Ridley, the list goes on and on. It's an amazing group that you've got together.
And the great part of it is that we enlarged our conference room so we could have a group as large as this one, but I feared that bringing all those egos into that room, it might not hold them. But there's been tremendous humility as we've interacted.
I think a sense of humor helps a lot.
Oh, for sure. Well, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, pleasure.
Great. Thank you for joining us. And to find out more about reconciling economics and ecology, visit www.perc.org.